Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Hello, good evening. Here we are again, Deserted Island. This a Wednesday night here live in Sheffield. This week I've got a great guest. I've been chatting to him for the last hour. It's Joe McNally. Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing very well, thanks. I'm very well.
Thanks for coming on the show. So we're going from last week we had the youngest ever guest on the show, Sarah, who was 29 years old, and she was fantastic. And I think, if you don't mind me saying, you might be the most senior man we've had on the show so far. At 80 years old, you don't mind me sharing that.
I don't mind at all. I'm hanging on in there.
So, I mean, you're the kind of person that I wanted to set up the show for, really, because just kind of knowing your history that I've talked about so far and kind of what we're going back to what life was like, not many people can still remember, Joe, really. So just take us back. So you're born in Kildare.
Yes.
In 1945.
Yes.
Just tell us a little bit about kind of what your earliest memories and what that kind of place was like growing up.
Well, the earliest memories I have is of being at home with my father and mother and my then younger sister, because I had one sister at that time. but I suppose it's fair to say that I'm before electricity and I'm before, I'm certainly before the motor cars were as prominent and as plentiful as they are today, and before radio, and all of that. And I remember when you said life, when I said before electricity, the electricity was being brought into Ireland at that stage, and across the road and across a farmer's field was the nearest pylon, and it would have cost my father in those days.
Yeah.
£2,000.
£2,000 back then.
£2,000. £2,000 back then to bring the electricity from the pylon to the house. And needless to say, we didn't.
You didn't bother that.
No.
So what did you? So you know, I suppose it days. It is hard to imagine now. I was just hearing on the radio on the way in about people having less capacity to have attention. So people's like constantly doing different things, but. Suppose back then you had to make your own fun, and how would you do that? And what would be like an evening like? Or?
Well, it depends. Summer evenings were wonderful because you were out playing football or hurling or things like that, and we were all out playing. But winter's evenings were short and, well, they were long, really, and tight and dark. And we actually spoke to each other, and we talked, and people told stories, and neighbours who were. Very good at spinning yarns. Usually went around from one house to another, and there would be stories told, and that was very good. And then we got it became easier to read when we got tilly lamps.
Okay.
And
what's a tilly lamp for?
Well, a tilly lamp was an oil lamp with a gauze.
It's a bit like a miner's lamp type thing, of that ilk.
Yeah. No, it was working oil pressure.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember when the first radio came, and my father, God rest his soul, bought one, and we had it, and he used to listen to Radio Luxembourg was the biggest, and he was a very great fight fan, and he listened to all the major fights on it,
and then
we had. Things like Hopalong Cassidy was the thing who used to advertise Spangles was the sweets that were, okay. were told, and all these sort of things. But you made your own fun, and you actually engaged in talking with your family and with your neighbours.
Well, it sounds and what kind of place was it? The town you was in, or
well, I was born outside of Thigh, about a mile and a half. in a cottage, and it was a two-bedroom cottage, one bedroom in each end and one in the middle. That's the way it was, and we were indeed fortunate, and we felt fortunate indeed to have a home.
Yeah. So, deserted island. This what we do is go for your life, and I mean, I've heard so much about your life already just talking to you, and you've done great things, which we'll hear about later on. So I think like hearing about those, you'd have to say humble beginnings, wouldn't you? You just go humble.
Absolutely. Cared for, humble beginnings, but people who knew the value of right and wrong, and people who knew what was the right thing to do, and even though that there wasn't a superabundance of wealthy or worldly goods, you still were expected to do what was right.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll tease the audience a bit with kind of where you got to, but really there's some very important things you've done in your life, and you know, it's great to have you here, and we'll go through and talk about them as we get there. But part of the show is playing songs as well. So we had a little test run of some of the songs, and you did have a great voice when you were just singing along to them. But also the smile on your face when you heard these songs was amazing, Joe. So the first song you chose is the one from the Gallagher Cayley band, the Bluebell Polka. Just explain why you picked this one?
Yes, because, I mean, Pat McGarr and the Gallagher Cayley band were local to us. They're Naas, 20-odd miles away, and they were emerging as a very popular band in Ireland. And we were very keen to follow and dance them, and we used to cycle all over the place to dances as part of how we made our entertainment as we got a little bit older.
Yeah.
And we would cycle to Naas, or we would cycle to the Rocket on the Maes, or we would cycle to any venue in around Kildare that they were playing.
Yeah.
And that this was their signature tune.
Okay, let's play this. Love the Galaglass Cayley band there. That's the choice of Joe McNally. Yeah. Enjoy that, Joe.
Yes, it did. It took me back many a year, that.
I could tell, He's tapping away there and a lovely smiley face when he's when you hear those songs, it probably really takes you back, yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yeah,
yes, it
fantastic,
does.
Fantastic. I was saying that Joe's tested my skills because everyone else I've ever had on the show, I can find them on a, should we just say, streaming sites. That's how I do it. And Joe's things like that are not on there. So they're not on Spotify and these places at all. So we've found them now, Joe. Thank you. Okay. And I'm glad I did. They're lovely, okay. Lovely songs. So that one and the next one isn't in the same format. So, yeah, back to you, Joe. So we're talking about your life. We've talked about, so you were growing up in near
Athy.
In Kildare. And you had your mum and dad and you got younger siblings.
Two younger siblings.
Yeah, so they're there. And so those kind of years, let's take us through to your school years and up to your teenage years, Joe. What were those years like for you?
Very good as far as they went. I was my first school was a country school. It's still there. It's a place called Churchtown, and it's way out in the country.
Yeah.
And it's one little national school. And I remember all the classes were in the same room.
Yeah.
And there's a big open fire in the corner. There's one teacher.
Yeah, they wouldn't have that now, would they?
No, but that's the way it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a happy time. And then when you sort of thing outgrew that, you went to the nuns. Yeah. And the Sisters of Mercy were in Athy, and they did, as far as I'm concerned, a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And we were there until you made your first communion, and then you went to the Christian Brothers.
Right.
There was an Irish Christian Brothers school there, not there anymore. And I've got nothing but happy memories there. I hear all sorts of stories on various media about the Christian Brothers and how difficult they were and how hard they were. I can't speak with any experience to any of that. They were hardworking, decent men who devoted their lives to helping others, and there may have been among them those that didn't match that description, but I've not met them. They were very good.
Not in your
very
experience.
Very good. No, yeah. Very good.
Yeah. And so you finished school, I suppose, quite early, wasn't it? Was it the same as everyone finished?
No. There were two matters that coincided. I had a job in the summer holidays, because as you can appreciate, summer holidays are a little longer in Ireland, and I used to work in a grocer's shop, and it's very interesting how things are different today. I mean, I used to work in the square in Athy for a man called Paddy Dillon, God rest his soul, and Paddy was a high class grocer and provision merchant.
Okay.
And you had to serve your time in those days. Now I'm talking before supermarkets.
Yeah.
There was shops were different, and the shopping experience, if you want to use that terminology today, was much different. For example, if you go into a supermarket today and you see slices of bacon and packets of bacon all packed up and rightly there. When we got them, we bought sides of bacon, and they would come in Hessian sacks with 8 or 10 in a side, and they had to be cut up.
Yeah.
And then you had a bacon slicer which sliced the bacon, and you were able to, and not indeed were you able to, but you had to slice it at the thickness the customer required.
Yeah.
And it was that sort of service.
Yeah.
And of course the profit, if I can call it that, depended on how you cut the bacon.
Yeah.
And that was a skill in itself.
Could have any waste, could you?
Well, the less waste you have, of course, the better. Yeah. And then sugar came in 800-weight sacks.
Okay.
And you had to measure that out.
It sounds heavy.
£7 bags, sugar bags, and £1 sugar bags.
Yeah.
If you're... Sometimes you'd get £2, but it all had to be meticulously weighed out and shelves stacked.
Yeah.
So that was the kind of...
That was your job when you were a teenage years, you're still at school and then carried on. So, I mean, and also, Scorn, what was the other thing that was kind of a big factor in you leaving school?
Well, there were two factors. One is that I suppose it's right in just to... put it in context. My father, God rest his soul, was a stonemason. And there wasn't a lot of work in and around Athy for a stonemason. And he, in some jobs that he had, he used to cycle 8 miles a day, yeah. 8 miles each way to work. And then it came that he went to work from somewhere else, and that meant he was cycling over 20 miles each way a day. And I remember very clearly my mother, God rest her soul, saying, "Davy, you can't be doing things like this. You just can't. You'll not be able to." So I know he headed out for England.
And as a lot of people did in that era, didn't they? Yeah.
And he came, and then he went to painting and decorating and was working at that. And then it came that he fell from a great height from a ladder, and both his ribs went through his lungs.
Yeah.
So he was effectively invalided, and that helped me to make a decision to leave school early and help.
So you became breadwinner in at such a young age for the family. Yeah?
Well, yes, and I helped. I helped. Yeah, too, yes.
Because your father then was in England, and was he convalescing in England and staying?
Yes, he was. He was staying with his sister, who was living in London at the time, and he was there, and we were at home.
Yeah, you got the family there, and well, you were the man of the house then.
Worked that way.
Yeah, for a young age, yeah, it was a lot of responsibility, and perhaps that's kind of stood you in good stead throughout your life. Would you say that kind of
didn't hurt
taking responsibility from that young age?
Didn't hurt.
And I think that's kind of followed you through with some of your career paths and where it's gone, yeah? So, let's do another song choice. So you've got Jim McKillop next is your next choice. So just tell us a bit about why you've chose that one.
It's Uncoolion, and that's one of the oldest pieces of sheet music that exist. And part of the how do we entertain ourselves, if I can go back to that question, was that there's music in our family. My uncle Jack was a fantastic musician, one of the very first people to broadcast on Radio Éireann with the pipes, and he could play anything. He'd literally play anything you handed it to him, and he could play it. And then
did you do that round your house? Sorry,
down the house, and we always went. And then there was a St John's Hall, was a hall in the town that they all had use of. It was like a community hall in a way.
Yeah.
And they had use of that. And they set up there the first Kiltis Kiltory Éireann. And I was only a young lad at the time. I was, 12, 13. And I used to go with my uncle.
Yeah.
And they made me secretary because I could play nothing.
Okay.
And
Did you ever try then? Did you ever try?
Oh yeah, I can knock a tune out on probably a tin whistle, but not great. But there was a couple of lads there that were really really good. There was a chap called O'Byrne. I think he's just died recently, and he used to play the Ilian pipes.
Yeah.
And there was another chap from Galway there called P.J. Nocter, and he was a flautist and he could play.
Yeah.
And when it came to the traditional Irish airs, the Coolion was one of the
beautiful song. Let's play that one. It's coming in now. Thank you. absolutely beautiful. I could see, yeah, so no, Joe there, you was, you're getting into that, weren't you?
That was beautiful. Beautiful tune.
Beautiful tune. We're just listening quietly here in the studio to a great song. So it's, what's it called again?
Unculian.
Unculian. So is it the cooling in English, I think, is how it's found? So people want to find it. Again, it's not on Spotify. It's a YouTube. The cool in it is on Spotify, Unculian in Gaelic, yeah. And it's Jim McKillop's version, which was beautiful, very beautiful. Thanks for that. Thanks for introducing that to us and the wider audience there, Joel. Thank you so much. Okay. So, back to your life. We're on Deserted Island this here, live on a Wednesday. And so we're kind of going through your teenage years. You've heard about your dad's stopped working, so you were working for the family. And what happened after that? So you kind of went to another job.
Well, in fact, the grocers was a job that I did at school and school holidays. When I needed to work full time, I went to work in a foundry.
All right.
And the owner of the foundry lived where he was just down the road from us. He lived just down the road from us, so he offered me a job, and I went.
Yeah. So well, as you do, and is that so? Atai is kind of a big enough town then to have a foundry and some industry there. Yeah. So
at the time, Atai was one of the leading towns in Leinster. It had five industries. It had Bachelor's Pease.
Right.
It had the IVI asbestos factory.
Right.
It had Borden and Mona, the wallboard, who used to make wallboard. It had the IVI.
And then the foundry, yeah?
And one other, and I just can't remember now.
Yeah, no, well, that's it.
Yeah, but it was a very prosperous town then.
Yeah, yeah. So you were there, and you'd done, was that like an apprenticeship in the foundry, or was it just...
No, I was dealing with dispatch and office work and that sort of thing.
Oh, okay, so
it was a hard station for the people who were moulding.
Yeah.
And handling molten metal.
Yeah, yeah. But so yeah, there's a lot of industry and employing a lot of people then in that area of
In those days there was.
Yeah.
In those days there was, certainly.
And it's that kind of post war rebuilding stuff that was happening across
Well, the foundry used to supply pulleys to the Germans.
Right,
okay. To Lieber, who were the big train makers and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a hell of a prosperous
streak
in the town at the time. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Not so now.
Yeah. So, but then I suppose another big occasion in your life happened that kind of made you leave Ireland. So I'll let you kind of talk about bit of a sad point in your life there.
Yes, unfortunately my mother died in 1964. She was 49 years old.
Yeah.
And that changed it for us all.
Yeah.
I had an inkling, I suppose it would be a decent way of expressing it, to join the police. I was an avid reader and I joined the library. And my father, God rest him, had sent me some books, and one of them was The Life of Marshall Hall, KC,
okay,
as he was then. So that was all criminal trials and et cetera.
Hi.
And the other was The Life of Sir Bernard Spilsbury, who was a leading forensic psychologist at the time.
Okay.
Pathologist at the time. And I read those, and I thought, that's of interest. And that was that. So I didn't come over to England specifically to be a policeman. I came over to England.
Why do you think your dad sent you those books specifically? Did he send you others? Or
yes,
there was lots of books. Yeah.
And I came because at the time there was very little employment in Ireland.
Yeah. So if your mother's passed away and your dad's in England, really, suppose you'd go to where he is where.
And that's what I did.
And you had obviously aunts and uncles in England as well, and I suppose a lot of people of that generation in Ireland came across to England as well. Wouldn't it be a well trodden path of coming across?
Yes, I remember when I came, we went to England, and work was plentiful in those days. It was plentiful here too.
Yeah,
there was an Irish employment agency up in Archway.
Yeah.
The Shamrock, would you believe, Irish agency. And I went up there to see what I could get.
Yeah.
And as I came out of Archway Station and walked across the road, I walked into two fellas I'd been at school with.
Yeah, yeah. Were only out 27.
Yes. That was just by the station.
Yeah.
And they were just finalising their £10 passages to Australia.
Wow! Yeah. Right. Yeah. And you didn't fancy that?
No.
No.
Not at that stage. No.
But you told us. I mean, we're already nearly halfway through, and but I'm always so interested in the stories you've told already. But one of the interesting things you said was about, first of all, you arrived in Birmingham, was it?
Yes.
And part of that decision. So just to say, I mean, where you ended up, Joe, what was your final rank in the police?
I was Chief Superintendent.
Chief Superintendent in South Yorkshire Police, yeah. Yes. So, you know, pretty high. And so that kind of part of that decision to become a police, you were talking about meeting a police officer in Birmingham.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the decision of where I joined. Yeah. I mean, I was down in London. I did my the exams for the police down in London, and for the Birmingham police. But it's ever such a simple story, but it marks out. When we came, my father and I got arrested. We got off the train in Birmingham, in New Street, and went to see my aunt who lived in Birmingham. And as we walked down by into Digbeth, the police station is on the left, the markets are on the right, and out from the side street came a policeman. He had a cape over his shoulder, and he was the smartest man I've ever seen. Wow. He really was. He really was well turned out. Anyway, that was that. And then when I came to London, and I remember, I mean, they weren't all like this, in fairness. They weren't all like this at all. But it was the era of the long hair. Pardon me. Collar-length hair. Sitting on a bollard, swinging his legs, and I thought, no, I'm not. that's not for me.
So you saw like the smart fella...
Yes.
The police and first person in London was kind of very different, and you thought you want that path for you. What is it? Yeah, no, and you did it, I suppose. So we probably need to get some songs in. Let's play a song, and then we'll come back to kind of you joining the police and all those first years there. So your next song is if I say it right, is it Molly Ban? Molly Ban, which is the Kilfenora Cayley Band.
Kilfenora Cayley Band.
So you supported a jig or a reel from Miss Kilfenora band.
A good
why
band.
Why is that?
Oh, well, it's part of what we were doing as youngsters, a part of how we were dancing, we were at Cayley's, it's the same genre as the Gallaglass, isn't it? It's the same. We were very traditional at that time. We're long before modernity.
Yeah. So where would you go to the Cayleys then? This is back in in London. Would you find a Cayley or not?
Yes, we would. I mean, one of the things in those days in the church halls, there was usually a dance on a Sunday afternoon.
So everywhere in London.
Lots of them around the place.
And you'd have a Cayley band.
Yeah, you'd have all sorts of bands, but yeah, Cayley was one of them. The Kilfenora were very prominent on the airwaves as well when they.
Yeah, during that time. Okay, let's do the Kilfenora Cayley Band. We'll be right back. Kilfenora Cayley Band, cracking song there. Yeah, toe tapping.
Yes.
Will you be dancing as well to those? Yeah.
Yes, I mean we had a little group in Athy when I was a lad. It was called Enthus Ogra Ogra Corra, and it was young friends.
Right.
It was a youth club.
Yeah.
And part of the things we did, we had every Sunday afternoon there'd be a dance, and we used to cycle round to various locations and dance and give dancing exhibitions, and usually the high call cap or the two hand chimshe or something like that. That's how we spent the time.
Sounds good. And so we're back with you here on Deserted Island Day. So yeah, every Wednesday we have a different person on each week who was born in Ireland and now lives in South Yorkshire. So yeah, tonight we've got Joe, who was born in Kildare in 1945 and has been in Sheffield. How long have you been in Sheffield, Joe?
30 years.
30 years in Sheffield. But so far, we've not got you to Sheffield yet in your journey. So let's move along the way a little bit. So a big part of your life has been in the police. So
yes.
Do you want to tell us a bit about kind of the early days of being in the police and how you joined and where you joined, etc.?
Well, I joined Birmingham City Police in 1966. Then went off to Wrighton and Dunsmore for 6 months training and came back and was posted to a place called Handsworth.
Yeah.
And I worked there for...
Not the Sheffield Handsworth.
No. But funnily enough, Handsworth in Birmingham has the next postal address beside it is Aston. And when you come to Sheffield, South Yorkshire, it's replicated,
yeah.
isn't it?
It's not enough out of it, is it? Yeah.
But not the same one. I came back and worked in Handsworth as a uniformed constable. I did that for 3 years. And then I went on to the CID. And the rest of my service was particularly in that area.
In the CID, yeah. Well, you were telling about the kind of inspirations for joining the police. So you talked about the books, but then I suppose you were saying you met, there was quite a few Irish people in the police, and you met a fellow in London who was in the police.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, that was funny because I stayed in a place, I was staying in a place in London, in Clapham, with a Dublin woman. Mrs. Bland was her name, and she had two lodgers, myself and a fellow called Brendan Blake. And Brendan was a practical joker, and we were coming home one evening from a dance, and don't ask me why we got off in Warren Street. It must have been a requirement, but we wouldn't have normally got off there anyway. But we did, and as we came out and looked for another means to get home, Brendan saw what I thought was the biggest policeman that I've ever seen in my life, walking towards us. And it turned out that he was a Mayo man.
Yeah.
So Brendan then decides to tell him that I wanted to be a policeman and would he recruit me and all of that sort of old nonsense. And anyway, we did. And he said, I must tell you a funny story. We got talking to this chap. We must have been talking to him for half an hour. And he said, I must tell you a funny story. And we said, well, what's that? He said, well, I came on the other morning, he said, at 6 o'clock shift, he said, because I'm the sergeant, I have to do things in advance. So I was there at 5:15.
Yeah.
So he said, I was there, and then he said, I was doing what I had to do and getting ready for the parade. And the inspector stuck his head around the corner and said, look, down in Warren Street, everything has come to a stop, and I think you are the best man to go down and talk to them. They'll understand you better. So he said,
because you understand him because he's Irish.
Well, that was the implication of it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, he went down and he said, usually, he said, when a contractor is going to cross the road, he said, they dig half the street up, he said, and leave the traffic to go on a one-way system or a one-lane system on the other side. He said, but when I got down there, he said, he'd gone straight across the road, this fella. He said, and he was still down the hole and he was still digging. And I said, hey, what are you doing? So he took not the blindest bit of notice of him. And he said, he took another little bit. And then, pardon me, he said, he threw up the shovel and he jumped up and out of the hole. And I said, what have you been doing? And he said, look, pal, he said to the sergeant, I know nothing about this. I arrived here, he said, this morning at 4 o'clock. And the ganger man said to me, dig it up, Pat, not your country.
So he'd shut down half of London.
Absolutely.
to digging up the hole.
And he just walked away, so he left him to it.
Yeah, well, right.
So the vagaries of policing come in different ways, and the problems are different, aren't they?
Yeah. So you joined up in Birmingham.
I did.
So is this what year were you in roughly?
1966.
So you'd got so lots going on in that time.
Yes.
And I suppose it feels like that England was probably kind of an optimistic place back then in the 60s, would you say, in terms of kind of. I mean, I was born in 71, so I don't know. Just going off what my parents were saying about kind of, the people feeling positive about the future. And you've got you baby boomers coming through and changing the world.
Yeah, they got over the worst. They were just getting over the end of the war and all that happened then. In many ways, society, for me anyway, looking back, was different. There was much more humanity. There was much more understanding.
Yeah.
And I think it's not unrelated to the fact that a lot of the people had lived through the war and had lived through hardship and all of that. It was a good town. I like Birmingham. Birmingham was a really good town.
Yeah.
And it was a very strong Irish town too.
Yeah, and so you'd be in your 20s or so and
yes.
kind of
yes.
exploring life and stuff.
Yes.
And is that where you met your wife in that period?
Yes, it is.
That period?
Yes, it is.
Should we give her a mention?
Well, of course not. Yeah, I met Philomena. We met in Birmingham Town Hall, where there was an Irish comedian called Kevin Hilton
right.
was doing a show, and it was a Sunday afternoon. And I was with my aunt and my uncle downstairs, and she was with a number of girls, and they were upstairs. And she tells me that I was guffawing, is the way she would say it, because I was laughing out louder than a lot of other people. And I remember her looking over the balustrade to look down.
Who's that laughing
and
so much?
And I saw her, and that was that. And then there was a little dance there afterwards, and I had a dance. And
So did you go and ask her for a dance, was it?
Of course I did, yeah.
Yeah, well.
And as the Shanachie would say, so things rested so. and there was no more. But and then about 3 weeks, a month later, I was at evening mass at St. Francis. And there was an Offaly priest there called Father Heaney. There were two Offaly priests, actually. One was Monsignor Tom Fallon, who was, God rest his soul, a great man. And he had a young curist on exchange, as they used to do in those days, a fellow called Father Heaney. And Phil came with a girl who lives in Dublin now, Mary Reaney. And as she walked past, I said to the priest, "Hey, Father," I said, "who was that?" "Oh," he said, "that's Philomena," he said. I said, "Would you go and introduce her to me?" And he did.
Yeah.
And
well, you'd already had the dance at that point.
Oh, yeah, we'd had a dance, but there was no more to it.
I lost contact.
We did, and there we are. 54 years later, we're still around.
Still going strong.
Yes,
and,
yes. Great Garlene.
We'll try and get... We'll do your family bit now. I know it's a bit out of kind of sequence, but... So you've got children and grandchildren? Should we give
yes,
mentions?
I've got four children, a boy and three girls. John, who's a barrister down in London. I've got Sarah. Catherine is next. Catherine's a teacher in Clane, County Kildare. She's over there and she's got four boys. Then there's Sarah, and Sarah's a doctor at Rotherham and a consultant at St. Luke's.
Yeah,
and Judith is a pharmacist.
Wow, right. So yeah. All doing well.
Got them all. Even got a drug dealer in the family.
Yes. Okay. Well, we better try and get these songs in, and then we'll come back to more about your life in the police and what brought you to Sheffield and all that we need to do. So we've got The Rose of Castlereagh.
That's my wife.
Yeah,
she's from Castlereagh, Roscommon woman. She's from a place called Liscull, and that's near enough Castlereagh.
Okay, let's play that one.
Oh, the lambs were playing in the field and the tulips were in flower. When I left the home I loved so well, I can never forget the hour. Before me were Atlantic waves to a home in Tennessee. And I left behind me the girl I love, she's the Rose of Castlereagh. She may not have been a beauty queen, she may never be a rose, but to me she is the fairest flower that in the garden grows. And although I am in America, across the Atlantic Sea, sure I'll always love my Roscommon girl, she's the Rose of Castlereagh. It's many a night that I lie in bed that my thoughts fondly go to the lovely days when I walk my love on the road out by Knockrow. Her smiling face, her shining hair was a joy for all to see. 'Twas a cruel day that I went away from you and Castlereagh. She may not have been a beauty queen, she may never be a rose, but to me she is the fairest flower that in the garden grows. And although I am in America, across the Atlantic Sea, sure I'll always love my Roscommon girl, she's the Rose of Castlereagh. They opened up the Roscommon Herald that I just received today, for to read about my native town and my friends so far away. But the tears began to blind me as I glanced across page 3. Had a picture of her wedding day was the Rose of Castlereagh. Farewell to you, Roscommon, Bumpkin, Fad, the Shannon Shore. Farewell to Boyle and French Park, I'll never see you no more. The cotton fields near Memphis must remain a home for me, but I'll always love my Roscommon girl, she's the Rose of Castlereagh. She may not have been a beauty queen, she may never be a rose, but to me she is the fairest flower that in the garden grows. And although I am in America, across the Atlantic Sea, sure I'll always love my Roscommon girl, she's the Rose of Castlereagh. Sure I'll always love my Roscommon girl, she's the Rose of Castlereagh.
The Rose of Castlereagh, which is where Philomena's get from. Yes?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Joe's wife for many years, 54 years.
54 years. Coming on 55.
So she's the Rose of Castlereagh.
Certainly is, and still is my Rose of Castlereagh.
Beautiful, beautiful. So we are going to run out of time, Joe, but we'd like to get you back at some point. Some point to talk about some of the work you're doing currently. But just to kind of finish your story through where you're at.
Okay.
You must have done really well. I've just saying to Joey, I've noticed from me, he doesn't seem to like the praise very much. He kind of shies away when I tell him how great he's done. You can see him cringing a bit about it. And again, is it like you've just got on with life and it's happened? You've done what you've done, but you must have got promoted pretty quickly through the police.
I had a steady run. On a steady path. But one of the things that I suppose I'm very conscious of, that you don't achieve much on your own, you know.
Yeah.
There are other people always there, and other people that help and support you, guide you, and you don't achieve much on your own. And I'm reluctant to want to say, well, that's down to me or that's not down to me, because I don't think anybody achieves much on their own.
That's true, that's very true. Very, very wise words there, Joe, but... I mean, you have to take that opportunity when you've got it, though, and you've done that. I mean, that's the thing. I think you've got to be in a place that people help you to have the opportunity, but ultimately you've done that. You've got yourself, you know, where you did in the place. But let's talk about your move to Sheffield. So you'd moved to West Mercia, didn't you?
Yes.
So you'd been in... West Midlands, was it then? Probably wasn't called that then, was it?
It was. I mean, Birmingham City, then the 1974 amalgamation took it up to West Midlands.
Yeah.
And of course, West Mercy was the next force along.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I ended up in West Mercy in an unusual way. I had a phone call one night from a pal of mine. He's still a bloke, God, thank God. And he said, yeah. Listen, he says, there's going to be an advert in this force very soon, he said, and they'll be looking for detectives and detective superintendents, he said, and you ought to stick in.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, I never even thought of it. It never occurred to me. And I didn't see much point in it, and I went and talked to my wife about it, and I stuck in, and would you believe, I got a post, but it wasn't a detective's post, but that didn't matter. And then when I got it, I thought I didn't want it.
Right.
And they said to me, well, you better take it, because if you don't... there'll be problems. And I did, and I never looked back. It was good.
Yeah, and then good. Obviously... Well, how long after that did you wait till you kind of moved to Sheffield? So you said
2 years.
She was only in West Mercy two years.
Only 2 years. I was the acting divisional commander in a place called Redditch.
Right.
And then South Yorkshire came up.
Because you were saying you got family in South Yorkshire and you'd been a few times.
Oh, yes. My mother's sister, Nancy, was married in Barnsley, and she'd been there since the 1930s, for Nicholas, and they were very well established. And I had come to, and I had been coming to South Yorkshire for 25 years, never been to Sheffield.
Yeah, right.
Always to Barnsley. Always to Barnsley. And I liked it, and I liked Barnsley.
There's quite a big Irish community in Barnsley, isn't
there? Yes, there was. They came up to the pits, as it were.
Yeah,
then. And in fact, my wife's father, as a young man, worked in Barnsley.
So you knew a bit about it, and the opportunity came up for that. Was that a promotion then? Into Sheffield. So you applied, and you got a job working for South Yorkshire Police during that time. And you did. So how many years before you retired?
At least 10 years there. It was very interesting because I came at a time when there was lots of challenges for the force, not least of which because they'd picked up the World Student Games, hadn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And that fell to me. So we thankfully managed that, and that went well. We'll say that. So that went very well, and it was great to see the. Bit of Irish success of that as well.
Okay.
There was. The chappie who now writes for. I'm trying to remember his name. He writes for one of the national papers in Dublin. He won a swimming medal.
Oh, okay.
In Ponds Forge.
All right. Before my time in Sheffield, but I've heard a lot about it.
Yeah.
So I mean, we are running out of time. I'm so sorry. We've not going to really do justice on your whole life, but as I say, you've had more of a life than anyone else that's been on the show before. So
thank God for that.
Got it all in. But some of the important things really was what trying to understand, Joe, was about your change. So you became a barrister after the police,
yes,
which is a huge thing. which I suspect, again, you're not going to take much kind of credit for and say, yeah, well done on that.
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I as part of my experience in the police, I had responsibility for the legal department, and it's always been my outlook on life. I'll not ask somebody to do something I don't do myself.
Right.
So I decided that I would do some of the stuff that.
So you got qualified.
Needed to do because otherwise.
Yeah. Well done.
That was the rationale for it.
Well, so you was doing it while she was in the police. Still.
Oh yeah, I started while in the police, and what happened was that the Nottingham Law School. Got the franchise to take the courses for the bar.
Yes,
and I had a call from the head of the Nottingham Law School to say that I want to do it. So that's why I resigned.
Right,
that's why I retired from the police and went to do that.
Yeah,
because I wouldn't have got the opportunity again.
Very good. Right. So I think. Well, see how we go. We'll play another song. So we've got Down by the Sally Gardens or It's Heaven Around Galway. Which I don't think we'll get both of them in because we'll
have
some more. So, what do you fancy?
Well, I suppose try Heaven Around Galway Bay.
Heaven Around Galway Bay. This is Daniel O'Donnell doing Heaven Around Galway Bay.
When they told me that Ireland was heaven. I said that's where I'm longing to stay. Then an immigrant voice said that's my land. If you please, sir, I'll show you the way. You will see. see smiling faces that greet you with a kid me la falsa store, and a candle burns bright in the window of a cabin with only one door. When you see the moon rise over Cleda and the golden sun kisses the sea, then you're on the right road, sir, for heaven. For it's heaven around Galway Bay. In the church on the hill, neath the moonlight, you can hear the sweet angel's voice sing. It's the angel whose heart I may gladden when I give her my gold clattering. And the Colleen who smiles so divinely at the sound of the bell stops to play. Just you turn and say, God bless you kindly, and to heaven she'll show you the way. And an old-fashioned lady who greets you says, come in, sir, you're welcome to stay. You're on the right road, sir, for heaven. For it's heaven around Galway Bay. Then you're on the right road, sir, for heaven. For it's heaven around Galway Bay.
Daniel, lovely song, beautiful, beautiful. So, we're getting towards the end, Joe. Okay. I hope you've enjoyed the last hour.
I think so.
You've been brilliant. So. I've learned a lot, and it's it was great to listen to your stories. And sorry we couldn't get more in, but just to finish off, to talk about your life now and what you're up to now. So you've told me, amazing, that you helped set up a hospice charity. Just tell us about that, Joe.
Yes, it's the Bethlehem Care and Hospice Trust. It's a Sheffield-based charity, but the work is done in Bethlehem. And we run the only hospice service in the West Bank.
Right.
And it's hasn't been easy. We set it up on the 1st of August 2023. And, of course, the 7th of October in 2023 came very quickly after that.
Yeah.
And it has caused all sorts of difficulties.
Yeah.
But suffice it to say that we had planned to cater for 32 patients at any one time. We have a team of four nurses and two students and one physiotherapist on a part-time basis.
Yeah.
And last night, we have 108 patients.
Wow.
And we can't keep up with the demand. And that's a full-time job at the moment as we try to... as we try to balance things and raise funds and do all the things that you need to do to support something like that.
Well, that's a huge thing, John. And what was the motivation behind that for you?
It's interesting. We went out in 2000 and... Well, I'll go back a stage. In 2010, I led a pilgrimage to the Holy Land of 198 people.
Yeah.
And it went very well. So we went back again in 2011... Yes. With the a pilgrimage from Hallam Diocese, and we were looking at and talking to people about how we might help the elderly there who were also in need of yeah. care. And we went back in 2012, and there was a lady there called Leila Asfura, and she was trying to get. She had what she called a care and repair centre for the elderly, and she was trying to get help. And we set up the Hallam Bethlehem Fund to try and do that with the help of Bishop Ross Thorne was here at the time. And we decided we'd try and help her. And as we raise funds, but funds don't come in very quickly.
Yeah.
So as we raise funds and we're trying to get help, another charity thankfully came in yeah. and helped her. So we went back in 2017 and they said to us, look, I don't know if you can help or not, but what we really need is a hospice.
Yeah.
Now, what they didn't know and what we didn't know
yeah.
was that they had the highest incidence of cancer care or reported cancer
yeah.
in the West Bank, and that 7 out of every 10
yeah.
are too late for treatment.
Yeah.
So palliative care is the only thing, and there was none.
Yeah.
So people said we couldn't do it, but we did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there we are.
So that's fantastic. So people can help and donate. We're going to get you back on the show or back on mm-hmm. Sheffield Life to tell us more, but people yeah. can find you. Where will they find you quick?
On the web, Bethlehem Care and Hospice Trust. It's on the website.
Fantastic work, Joe. You've been an absolutely amazing guest, and wish you all the luck for the future.
And thank you very much.